Life comes at you fast. Most of it is just smoke and mirrors. We're here to clear the air. Whether it's the can't make this up moments or the hard truths hitting our streets in our state, we're finding the signal in all that noise. No spin, no nonsense, just the facts, the fallout, and a little bit of humor. Grab your coffee. It's time for the Morning Drip on WRTO.FM, Radio Free Georgia.
Hey, and good morning. Welcome, everybody, to the Morning Drip. Today is Wednesday, March 25th, 2026. I hope you're doing well. Getting that first, second, or third, maybe cup of coffee into your gullet. I had an incident this morning, speaking of coffee. So, through the years, I've had specialty coffee cups made for whatever creative endeavor that I'm working on. I have a Tifton Talks mug with the logo and everything that I'm currently drinking out of. I had a Radio Tift mug that was primarily the one that I put my coffee in. And really, there was no reason for it other than the fact that it just was at the front of the coffee cup line. My wife and I, we have these two coffee cups that we use every morning, and they wind up in the drying rack, and then they just get pulled back out, and that's what we have our coffee in every morning. This morning, I did everything like I normally do. Made coffee, and I always have one cup of coffee. You know, I get up at 5 o'clock every morning. So I get up, take my shower, make my bed, and then, and I say make my bed because, yes, my wife and I, we're coming in on 36 years in May of being married, and we're still in the same bedroom, but we went to separate beds 3-4 years ago, and it's been great. I don't have any complaints because I'm a rotisserie chicken. I am a terrible, terrible sleep partner. So anyway, not to get off track here. So I made the bed, I make the coffee, et cetera, et cetera. Usually I'd, you know, have a morning constitutional. I know you really wanted to hear about that. And then I make a second cup of coffee, and then I come out to my office/studio to get my morning started. You know, whether it's to look at things that happened overnight with some of my clients, finish off the show notes for this show, et cetera, et cetera. So I get out here and, you know, we live in the South. So we have cobwebs, spider webs all over the place, right? And so there was a spider web on my left hand, and it had one of the little pine tree tassels, if you will. And I was trying to get it off my hand, and I had my keys in my left hand. I had my coffee in my right hand. So I set my coffee cup down. I've got this old log, if you will. It's only about a foot and a half tall from one of the many times that we actually cut trees down around here. It's one of those that, you know, someone with some talent could probably turn it into like a coffee table or end table or something like that. So anyway, I sat my coffee cup down on it, and there's a piece, two little pieces of wood. I don't even remember where they came from, but I have put my water bottle there before. I have put my empty coffee cup there before. So I put my full coffee cup there. And as I'm trying to get this spider web and this tassel thing off of me, out of the corner of my eye, my coffee cup, just like, it's like a cat was there and went doop. It just slid right off the top of that damn thing, hit the concrete, and broke into like 4 or 5 pieces, coffee going everywhere. And so I was like, wow, that's a great start to Wednesday. It's a fantastic start to Wednesday. So I hope your morning has started off better than mine. I went back inside immediately and pulled out my Tifton Talks coffee mug and made myself my third cup of coffee because I never got to consume the second one. So you're having a cup of coffee. Salud. So like I said, today is Wednesday. It's March 25th, 2026. It's currently 55 degrees this morning. I actually had to put my hoodie on to come out here. We're looking at a high of 73. potential rain this morning, overcast skies in the afternoon, overcast skies throughout the night. So our temperatures are going to look somewhere between 53 and 73. The real feel will be between 53 and 73, and there's a 9% chance of rain. The sun came up just a few minutes ago at 7:32. It will sunset. It will set at 7:49, and we are currently now in the first quarter of the moon phase. So that is your Wednesday morning weather report. Tomorrow's high will be 82. Friday's high will be 88. Tomorrow looks like it'll be overcast skies throughout the day. And then Friday is going to be clear skies in the morning, partly cloudy skies in the afternoon. There you go. That is your Wednesday morning weather report right from right here, the Morning Drip on WRTO.FM, Radio Free Georgia. Our text and call-in line, you can try calling. I'm still running into some weird technical issues, and it all has to do with Bluetooth. Again, I had to shut the mixer off this morning and bring it back up and then make the phone reconnect. I will try to figure out what to do about this, but we'll see. We'll see. The number is 229-668-4911. Again, that is 229-668-4911. Shoot me a text or you can call. I cannot guarantee if the call will work, but you can give it a shot. Moving on. What do we got to talk about this morning? Other than all the chaos and all the crap that's going on in the world and where are we on Iran and all of that, well, let's go to something a little more closer to home. There is a bill to ban cell phones in high schools has passed the Georgia Senate. It was unanimously passed. It would implement what they're calling a bell-to-bell cell phone ban in all public high schools, expanding on existing restrictions for elementary and middle schools. The bill now goes to Governor Brian Kemp's desk for final signature, of course. Supporters, including Senator Sean Steele, argue the ban is necessary to eliminate classroom distractions and improve student mental health. If signed, Georgia would become the 27th state to adopt a full statewide bell-to-bell ban. If the bill becomes law, individual school districts will be responsible for enforcement, which may include purchasing those storage pouches or lockers or some other equipment to secure devices during the day. The bill has, of course, sparked an emotional divide between lawmakers and families, centered largely on school shootings and emergency communication. And see, that right there is the problem. I understand parents, their concern when they're like, but they need their cell phone in case of a school shooting so they can call 911 or they can call us and let us know that they're safe, where they're hiding, that type of thing. I get it. But that's a symptom of a much larger problem, and the problem being the school shootings. But we still have the lifeline argument. Survivors and families of the Appalachian High School shooting testified against the bill. They argue that cell phones are a critical lifeline during a crisis, allowing students to contact family and allowing parents to track their children's location via GPS. Lawmakers countered that during an active emergency, phones can be a dangerous distraction. And Senator Steele argued that students might miss life-saving instructions from teachers if they're focused on their screens. Opponents of the ban suggest that the state's legislative priority should be on, quote, tangible safety measures, such as weapons detection, safe storage laws, and mental health support, rather than restricting communication devices. If Governor Kemp signs the measure, Georgia schools will likely begin the 2026-2027 school year with these new restrictions in place. So what do you think? Now, see, I don't have children in the public school system. My youngest is 28, soon to be 29, and they never went in the Tift County school system. We are originally from Ben Hill County, and the short time that they did go through the Ben Hill County school system was very short. We homeschooled, and we're very proud. I was always concerned about that, about the social interaction being stunted or what have you. No, not a concern. Not a concern. My kids I couldn't be prouder of my kids and their interactions in the public. My wife always got accolades on how well behaved my kids were. So I don't really have a dog in this hunt, as they say. But if you do have kids in the public school system, I am curious to know your thoughts on a bell-to-bell cell phone ban. Now, as a Generation Xer myself, I graduated in 1988. So, of course, cell phones were not a thing. And I cannot imagine, I mean, we had pagers back then, but I cannot imagine that even a pager would have been accepted back then, especially if it had become a distraction. Now, if you kept it in your book bag, your backpack, whatever, and kept it on vibrate and just checked it in between classes or whatever, A, were you a drug dealer? That's kind of what I'm curious about. And B, it wasn't really a distraction. Can I say how many people would have had a pager back then? No, I didn't have my first pager until I was 21, 22, something like that. So it's a different world in 2026 to be thinking about should they or shouldn't they have access to a cell phone while they're in school. It's a tough choice. I understand the security aspect coming from the parents because that is a legitimate concern. There is nothing worse than not knowing about your loved ones when something like this is going down. I get that. We always want to be able to immediately reach out and talk and text or, are you okay? Can you get out? You know, whatever. But we also have to look at the other side of that. The school system, you are there for one purpose, and that is to be educated. Some would claim indoctrinated. That's a discussion for a different time. But you are there to be educated. You're not there to be on WhatsApp or Signal or Facebook or Insta or Twitter or whatever social media chat program that you're on your phone, TikTok, etc. You're not there for that. So it's a tough decision, but I'm kind of leaning toward I think it's the right decision. But let me know what you think. Text the show at 229-668-4911. Or if you're listening to this live, you can give me a call at that same number, 229-668-4911. If you're listening to it afterwards in podcast form, email the show, show@morningdrip.com. Again, that is show@morningdrip.com. All right, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about another thing going on in the Georgia school systems. This morning just must be about the school systems. Anyway, appreciate your time. We'll be back in a bit.
More caffeine, more conversation. This is The Morning Drip. Save this in your phone, 229-668-4911. That's your direct line for calls and texts. Now, back to the mess.
Hey, and good morning. Welcome back to The Morning Drip. It is Wednesday, March 25th, 2026. Again, that call and text number is 229-668-4911. Love to hear from you. Or you can email the show, show@morningdrip.show. Again, that's show@morningdrip.show. All right, continuing with what's going on here in the great state of Georgia. Georgia could become the first state with weapons detection in all public schools. On Monday, the State Senate Public Safety Committee unanimously approved House Bill 1023, advancing legislation that would mandate weapons detection systems in all Georgia public schools. This is following the 2024 Appalachian High School shooting, that killed four people. Student advocates argued the technology could have prevented the tragedy and saved lives. Georgia House Majority Leader Chuck S. F. Strachan sponsored the bill, which requires schools to utilize detection systems while authorizing districts to use available grants for implementation. The bill now requires final votes in the Georgia Senate and House before reaching Governor Brian Kemp's desk in the final days of Georgia's 2026 legislative session. Again, it is a sad state of affairs that we have to do this. You know, I am fairly confident that there are a number of public school systems that have metal detectors. And so I don't know exactly what these particular weapons detection systems will do. And it's sad that we're here, but I can't deny that it's probably a wise choice. Students specifically already feel like, probably not everybody, but there are some students that already feel like that school is a prison. I know I know growing up, as I said, I'm a Gen Xer, graduated in 88. I sometimes felt like that, but it wasn't that bad 70s and 80s. My recollection anyway. But we didn't have metal detectors. Hell, we didn't even have video surveillance. I worked in the early 90s. I worked for a company. We were called, we were what was called an interconnect, not internet, but an interconnect company. We ran computer networking, data cabling. We installed phone systems. We installed surveillance systems. We installed alarm systems. And we got a job for putting in the very first surveillance cameras in Fitzgerald High School. And like I said, that was somewhere between 92 and 95, best I can recall. That's when I learned, as an aside, that's when I learned governmental budgets and how screwed up things can get. You know, as someone who was working in a for-profit business, we would always put together our projects to be as competitive as we could be, but we also needed to make some profit because we had overhead. You know, you had employees like me to pay salaries for. The owner needed to make money and all of that. And of course, so when we were given the budget, and I forget how much it was, it might have been like $14,000, $15,000 or something like that, which, you know, early 90s, that was a considerable amount of money. And so, of course, I approached it the same way that I would always approach it. I would try to come up under whatever the budget was that this person said they had. And I was immediately told when I presented that to the person in charge that this would not do. And I was a little dumbstruck. I was like, what are you talking about? Because I came in at like 12,000 or whatever. And he's like, you don't understand the way state budgets and governmental budgets work. If we allocate $14,000 for a line item or for a category and we don't spend all that, then it gets reduced for the next budget year. And I was dumbstruck. I was like, okay, so this explains why the governments are always running out of money or they overspend or what have you. I get it now. And so all I simply did was, okay, it's going to cost what your budget's for. And he's like, that's all I just needed on paper. So here I was trying to save the public school system a couple of grand and was told, no, we got to spend this money. So anyway, that was a tangent. I'm sorry. But yeah, I don't know how much these things are going to cost. I don't know how much it is allocated for it. But I think, unfortunately, I think it's something that in 2026 is going to be needed. And I find nothing wrong with surveillance in school systems. And I find nothing wrong with metal detectors in school systems. I find nothing wrong with weapons detection systems in school system. And as our previous story, I honestly don't find anything wrong with the bell-to-bell ban on cell phones. But lend me your thoughts, your voice. What do you think? The call and text in line is 229-668-4911. Again, that's 229-668-4911. The email address for the show is show@morningdrip.show. Again, that's show@morningdrip.show. I'm going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the story of the Georgia woman who was accused of using pills to induce a second trimester abortion and how that's going. So keep it right here. We'll be back.
Your coffee is weak. Your commute is long. Your boss is, well, you know. It's time to wake up. Join the revolution of the caffeine addicted. The Morning Drip. Every morning on WRTO.FM. It's not just a show, it's your daily jolt of reality. Warning, may cause sudden outburst of free thought. Back to the Morning Drip, because shouting at the TV just isn't interactive enough. Quit yelling at the screen and start telling us. Call or text 229-668-4911. That's one number for everything. Let's do this.
Hey, welcome back to the Morning Drip. It is Wednesday, March 25th, 2026. Currently 8:04 in the morning. We have a Georgia judge has made a significant ruling in a case involving the state's strict abortion laws, which, by the way, I'll go on record. I do not support the six-week ban. I think the ban that we had around 20 weeks, 18 to 20 weeks, maybe on the high side of 22, was the appropriate ban. But having a six-week ban is basically making abortion 100% illegal, because 99.9999% of women do not know if they're pregnant at 6 weeks. So let's be real here, people. You may disagree with me, and that's fine. You can be wrong. But this is the stance. It is a woman's choice, all right? And that is not a living, breathing human at 18 weeks or 22 weeks. I'm more in line with 18 weeks. I think 18 is probably the sweet spot. I don't think you need to go. It is at 20, 22, 24 weeks, the baby, you know, the fetus at that point can be classified, I would say, as a baby. If once outside of the womb, it is a premature baby and can be taken care of, it's going to have a rough travel to be able to, you know, to live. But, you know, we could settle on a compromise of about 18 weeks, but 6 weeks is just bullshit. Anyway, so we have the case of I guess you pronounce her name as Alexia Moore, A-L-E-X-I-A. She's 31. She was arrested on March 4th in Camden County in Georgia. The police allege that Moore, who was approximately 22 to 24 weeks pregnant, used misoprostol and oxycodone to induce an abortion. And according to the arrest warrant, the infant was delivered at a hospital and survived for about an hour before passing away. So, yes, this is horrific. I do find fault with Ms. Moore. If she was going to do this, why wait to 22 to 24 weeks? Because she was definitely on that outer edge of all the previous abortion caps, if you will, on where you can and where you can't abort, but, you know, the threshold of where it becomes murder, basically. So I don't feel good. I'm going to straight up, you know, I am pro-choice, as I've already stated, but I do not feel good about where she did this in the time frame. I'm not saying that she should be criminalized for it, even though it technically is breaking the law in the state of Georgia. I get that. But if I was sitting on a jury, I would have a hard time passing judgment against this woman. She was charged with murder and two drug-related offenses. This is one of the first instances of a woman being charged with murder for terminating her own pregnancy since Georgia's 2019, quote, heartbeat law took effect. Superior Court Judge Stephen Blackerby granted Moore a $1 bond for the murder charge, which is an exceptionally rare move for such a serious accusation. What was the judge's reasoning? Well, the judge expressed skepticism regarding the murder charge, calling it, quote, extremely problematic, end quote, and stating it would be, quote, a hard charge to convict upon, end quote. Her total bond was set at $2,001, $1,000 for each of the two drug charges and $1 for the murder charge. She was released from jail on Monday, March 23rd. So basically, he just took off the two drug charges, and the bond was for the murder charge. So let's put this in legal and political context. District Attorney Keith Higgins noted that police did not consult his office before filing the murder charge, and he did not challenge the $1 bond in court. For the case to move to trial, the district attorney's office must still obtain a grand jury indictment. Good luck. That's me saying that. The Georgia Public Defender Council, representing Ms. Moore, praised the judge's decision to, quote, carefully weigh the facts, end quote, rather than relying on accusation alone. So like I said, this one's troubling for me. As someone who is pro-choice, this one is still somewhat troubling because of the time frame. I cannot immediately, I said I would have trouble passing judgment on this woman. And I guess I would have to hear the case in its totality. What reasons did she have for, one, waiting until she was around 22 to 24 weeks? And two, what was her reasoning for the abortion to begin with? Pure speculation here. But when she found out she was pregnant, if she thought she was, this was not the time to have a child, she was not in a position in her life to have a child, maybe she couldn't financially afford a child, all of these things, which again, purely speculative on my part, I have no idea. I think she could have come to that conclusion sooner, 10, 12 weeks. Now, I realize that even with me saying that, that still violates Georgia's, quote, heartbeat law, because that's the entire idea is, and the quote jury is still out on this. Are you actually hearing a heartbeat at 6 weeks? Because that's being contested too. There is no heart at 6 weeks. So what are you hearing? But some folks have been convinced that that is a heartbeat. I don't know what to tell those folks. Look at the science. Look at the medical science. And I think you'll find that that's not technically a heartbeat. That's just an electrical impulse. But as I said, I have difficulty with this particular case because of the fact that she waited so long. You know, I do believe that it is the woman's right to choose for her own body. I do. I go so far as a man who has fathered three children, that even in the context of a couple being together and the woman becomes pregnant and the woman decides that she's going to terminate that pregnancy, the male partner, aka sperm donor, does not have a say. That's my opinion. I would like to think that if I were had been in that situation, that there would have been a conversation and that I would have been the better person and said, look, I understand. I may not agree with your choices, but I understand that you feel like you're doing what is best for you specifically. Because at the risk of sounding just really blunt, guys, we get in and we get out. That's it. That's all we do. We do not have to go through the physiological changes over the course of the next 9 months that a woman has to go through as what some would consider a parasitic entity in her body. In technical terms, a fetus is a parasite. Now, I know there's a lot of people that are clutching their pearls at that going, oh my God, he called an unborn child a parasite. No, I'm looking at it as just the technical scientific determination. You look at how they affect a woman's body, it works just like a parasitic relationship does. It's not saying that it's a bad thing. I mean, it's the way we're built. It's the way we procreate and continue the species, okay? But as men, we don't go through all of the changes that a woman has to go through. And then, just because of advancements in modern medicine, it's less risky today in modernity for a woman to give birth than it was, say, 100 years, 150 years, 200 years ago. You know, if she survived childbirth, that was a freaking miracle. So I say all of that to say this, that I am pro-choice, but this case bothers me because of the fact of where she was in the pregnancy when she decided to terminate it. That's where I have my issue. I have a bigger issue with the entire heartbeat law. I think that is complete BS and should be overturned. I'm fine with having an abortion ban at 18 weeks. 20's probably pushing it, but let's 15 to 18 weeks, I'm fine with. Because if you find out you're pregnant around week 8 or 9, that gives you a handful of weeks to make a decision about what's best for you, your body, and your future. You've got time. 6 weeks, you don't have time. But that's my opinion. I know, again, there's going to be some out there that are going to disagree with me, and that's fine. As I said before, you can be wrong. Love you. Oh, goodness. Okay, let's get off of this. We're going to have one more segment where we're going to talk about what happened up in Fulton County with the ballots and all of that. Dig into that a little bit before we get out of here. All right, you're listening to The Morning Drip. It is Wednesday, March 25th, 2026. We'll be back.
You're back with the Morning Drip on WRTO.FM. If you've got a bone to pick or a story to tell, hit us up at 229-668-4911. Again, that's 229-668-4911. Call it, text it, just don't ignore it. We're live.
And welcome back to the show. This is the Morning Drip for Wednesday, March 25th, 2026. Final segment before we get out of here and get you on your way to get your day started in this somewhat dreary-looking, overcast weather that we're having today. What did I say the high is going to be today? Dun-dun-dun, 73 degrees with a forecast for rain. Yahoo. Maybe we'll... You know, we're all complaining about how the weather is topsy-turvy right now, but trust me, in another month or two, we're going to be wishing we had this topsy-turvy, because instead, we're probably going to be looking at 100-degree days, and that's no fun. All right, on to the matter at hand. Let's talk about the Fulton County seizure of ballots, the FBI seizing those ballots from the 2020 election, the election that was not stolen. There was no fraud. It was just a... unfortunately, an ego-driven, maniacal person who could not accept the fact that he lost. And he lost fairly, he lost squarely. And I could get into a long diatribe about the Save America Act and all of that nonsense, but that's not what I'm going to talk about in this final segment of the show. What we're looking at here is there is now a five-hour Friday showdown over the seized ballots this Friday, March 27, 2026, U.S. District Court Judge J.P. Boulie, B-O-U-L-E-E, has ordered a five-hour hearing divided into two-and-a-half-hour segments for each side to address the FBI seizure of 2020 election materials from Fulton County. This hearing follows a failed attempt at court-ordered mediations earlier this month. So here's what we're talking about. On January 28, 2026, FBI agents executed a search warrant at the Fulton County Elections Hub in Union City. They seized hundreds of boxes containing original 2020 ballots, voter rolls, and digital ballot images. Fulton County officials have filed a lawsuit to get the materials back. They argue the raid was an act of, quote, political retribution by the Trump administration, and they emphasize that the 2020 results have already been validated by multiple recounts and audits. Probably more money was spent on that nonsense. We could have diverted that money and put it into healthcare or something. I mean, come on. There was no there. While the specific justification for the warrant remains under legal seal, President Trump has continued to claim election fraud occurred in Fulton County. Following the raid, he suggested that Republicans should take over election administration in 15 jurisdictions, including Atlanta. Listen to the words. Every jurisdiction that he talked about the, quote, Republicans taking over election administration are Democratic strongholds, because he knows that unless he cheats, unless he does something that muddies the water, his party's going to lose in the midterms. And we're going to have a Democratic president again in 2028 to unfortunately spend their first term trying to correct all of the nonsense and damage that this current administration has done to the country. You don't have to agree with me. That's fine. Read the tea leaves, my friend. You can look at this. Don't get your news from Fox News. Don't get your news from CNN. Go to Ground News, not a sponsor, but look at everything. You know, I'm not so hard-headed and so egotistical that I can't admit that even the Democrats have issues. They do. There's a lot more that I dislike on the right, and it's not Republicans in general. It's MAGA Republicans, okay? Mitt Romney, to me, would have actually probably made a pretty good president, and he's a Republican. But anybody that follows Trump, I can't get on board with. I mean, you've lost all credibility to me whatsoever. But the Democrats have their own issues, and they're tone deaf a lot of times. They speak too aristocratic, if you will. It's almost like they're talking down to the general populace. And as human beings, and dare I say as Americans, we have a level of hubris on ourselves that when you start talking down to us, we're like, oh yeah? I'll hold my beer. that kind of mentality. So anyway, little aside there from me, but yeah, the 2020 election was not stolen. It was proper. It was fair and square. I mean, if you really want to dig into it, there are accusations and what looks like some real evidence that the 2024 election did have some fraud, but from the right, thousands and thousands and thousands of ballots that did not get counted. Whether those would go toward Kamala Harris or would they have gone toward Trump, don't know. But they'll never see the light of day. This administration will never let anything like that happen. So why does all of this matter as far as what's happening in Fulton County? Well, this case represents a historic clash between federal investigative power and local counties' rights to manage its own election records. Here's the thing you need to understand. The Constitution of the United States allows the individual states to manage and set up how they do their elections, including the election for federal offices like the president, vice president of the United States. The federal government really doesn't have a dog in this hunt. They have no power when it comes to this, even though they are doing their damnedest to try to basically stick their nose in where it doesn't belong. They would love to federalize elections, but that is 100% against the Constitution. Georgia remains a central battleground in U.S. politics, so the outcome of this hearing could set a precedent for how the federal government could intervene in local election offices across the country. I don't believe they should be able to intervene, not to the level that they're talking about. Look, if there's accusations of corruption, fraud, and wrongdoing in your elections in a particular state, then the first level of investigative power should be the state. And then if that doesn't satisfy everybody, then you can bring in, let's say, the DOJ or the FBI, not this current DOJ, because they're just a personal lawyer for the Trump administration. They are supposed to be independent outside of the administration, so to speak. They're not supposed to take their direction from the president. They're not supposed to take their direction from the vice president. They're supposed to go after the cases and go wherever the evidence leads instead of conjuring up bullshit like Pam Bondi and her goons have done. But if you don't know what the SAVE Act is, or as Trump keeps saying, it's the Save America Act, dig into it. Dig into it. You'll discover there's some scary crap in there, because what they claim that they're doing it to try to protect the integrity of elections, because we don't want illegal aliens being able to vote, a.k.a. by the way, they cannot. That's essentially what they're trying to say is you need to be able to prove that you are a rightful citizen of the United States and you have the right to vote. I've already done that. When I went and got my driver's license, I had to prove that I was born here. I gave them my birth certificate, so it showed them that I was born in Ben Hill County. It also showed them that I was 15 years of age, so I could take the learner's test. And so when I got my driver's license at 16, you know, that already proved who I was and where I came from. And then when Real ID came about, we had to do it all over again. We actually had to provide extra information. We had to provide the birth certificate. We had to provide proof of address, a light bill, utility bill, your mortgage, you know, stuff like that. For women, if you were married, you needed to have your marriage certificate, marriage license, which I think got my wife screwed up because she didn't have it or something. And quite honestly, the lady that was there that day was being a bitch and wouldn't work with her on that. So she changed her name. She basically changed her name to make her last name her middle name. So it winds up being basically an initial. And then, she took my last name. They wound up just using her first name, middle name, and our last name. Anyway, so it'll be interesting to see how this plays out this Friday, what both sides have. You know, I'm going to, as a Georgian and as someone who votes Democrat, I do consider myself somewhat of an independent, but I would caucus with the Democrats, if you will. So I'm a little left of center. I'm curious how this is all going to play out because they are doing everything they can to muddy the waters and make everybody question how safe and secure and fraud-free our elections are. And Trump has a spur up his ass about mail-in voting. Yet, just this week, you can't escape it on the internet. Just this week, he did mail-in ballot for the county that he lives in Florida. By the way, a Democrat flipped that one. So good job, everybody. Good job. All right. That's it for this morning's show. I appreciate you taking the time. If you came here and listened to it live, thank you very much. Otherwise, listen to it as a podcast episode. It usually goes up within the day on the WRTO.fm website. Even if you drive up to morningdrip.show, it goes on over there. Got all those Fords and everything set up like that. Again, the call-in and text line is 229-668-4911. If after the show is no longer live, which is usually after 8:30, Monday through Thursday, you can just text that number if you want to, or send me an email. Again, that email address is show@morningdrip.show. That is show@morningdrip.show. All right, we're going to get out of here. I hope you have a wonderful Wednesday. Moving on toward the weekend, I got a lot of work to do this Saturday because I'm having about 15, 16 trees cut down starting next week, and I've got to remove an entire section of my privacy fence to make it easy for the guys to come in and do that. So that's what I've got on tap for Saturday. So anyway, have a great day, and we'll be back probably tomorrow. Take care. Bye-bye.